This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Florida 3rd District Representative Kat Kamick. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamick next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 560 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. This week, Congress punted on year-round E15 sales, and there's still no resolution to additional farm assistance for crop farmers nationwide. Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamick says the $1 billion in farm assistance for sugar farmers and specialty crop growers is not nearly enough.
Nobody that I know is interested in bringing back the direct payments as we knew them of the past. But what we also all recognize is that the farm economy is not doing great. And so this is, as it is titled, a bridge to get to the other side of what hopefully will be better days ahead. And when you've got a total of $12 billion and only one of that is going to our specialty crops, well, candidly, I have a problem with that. Because as we all know, specialty crops come with some unique challenges, and labor and higher input costs being one of them. So I'm hearing from producers that no, it's not near enough and a lot more needs to be done. And we're going to continue to have those conversations with the administration to make sure that it's a little bit more of an equitable distribution rather than the $1 billion to be shared amongst specialty crops.
Whether it is the specialty crop arena or whether it is row crops overall or agriculture in general, it's been evident in speaking to producers that we are in an agriculture crisis and that farmers are going to be lost unless drastic steps are taken for assistance, for domestic demand, and for global demand equating to commodity prices.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that the world continues to eat three times a day, and our producers are being asked to do more with less in the face of higher input costs and more challenges and a bigger bloated government that puts more and more pressure on our producers. But then in the face of that, you also have, and this is no surprise to anyone, retaliatory tariffs. And we know that agriculture is the first victim of those retaliatory tariffs when we're in these battles. And so there's just a lot of closed doors and windows and a lot of pressure on the shoulders of our producers. And the farm economy needs to do a 180, but it can't do it from the inside because our farmers have done everything they can to stretch a dollar, and it's as stretched as it can go. So we need to do more in Washington to make the pressure ease up a bit on the shoulders of our producers.
Well, in July of 25, there was budget reconciliation to save money. And now we're talking about a critical need for agriculture. There are other segments that might also fall into that particular fray. Congresswoman, where do you find the money to be able to help?
You know, it's interesting because in that budget reconciliation, we got some pretty good wins for agriculture. And I'll just use Florida as an example. Obviously, there's $1.2 billion that went towards research and development, University of Florida being the land grant. That's a big win for them. And when you're looking at things like citrus greening, which that type of research, that R&D can't be turned on and off with a light switch. It's got to have that steady, continuous funding mechanism so that we can actually get that resolved. That was very important. That was included in reconciliation. We also got about $422 million in an additional projected risk protection, which was really good. The voluntary base update was our priority, and I know people are probably sick and tired of me hearing me talk about base updates, but that base update was critical for producers in my state. And then, of course, you're looking at more money for conservation. Reconciliation was a very good start. Now we're looking at Reconciliation 2.0, and I'm very hopeful that with a farm bill and an additional reconciliation package, we can do something pretty magnificent for our producers around the country.
Farm Bill 2.0, why do you need it?
Oh, well, because our industry operates off of certainty and long-term projections. Again, the notion that agriculture can turn on a dime it's just simply a falsehood, you know. Even though we are the original innovators, we need to have long-term certainty because you're always planning the next season's crop. You're planning ahead. And if everything is continuing to change on a dime, you can't make long-term projections and be nimble. So, we have to do a better job in Washington of giving the long-term certainty, and a lot of that comes from the regulatory certainty. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to that say, if you could just stop the back-and-forth knee-jerk reactionary nature of the regulatory regime, that would go a long way. And that would have trickle-down effects across whether it was the fertilizer industry, whether it was the energy industry, whether it was the labor market. That would do more good pretty much than anything else.
Thinking in Farm Bill 2.0, there are research dollars. There's also rural development dollars. And there's also the loan side of the equation that while producers now are struggling to find operating loans, I don't know that it's the solution for all, but the USDA has a guaranteed loan program that does not reflect the economics of the day in production agriculture.
No, it doesn't. I mean, that's the thing that we need to address. I mean, looking at, you talked about R&D, I mean, we're seeing the billion plus dollars that was in reconciliation, that's going towards the block grants, the crop insurance, the investment in research. That's really, really important. I mean, and there was almost $7 billion in reconciliation that went towards specialty crops. And of course, Florida being a huge specialty crop state, 300 plus varieties, that stuff is really important.
So think then, moving forward, USMCA is set for review, and producers in your state you probably have a different view of trade than many other people, especially as it pertains to our neighbors to the south.
Yes, we were instrumental in the termination of the tomato suspension agreement, and that was critical because it was important that we send a message that we will not tolerate our producers continuing to be used as I don't want to say tools, but they will no longer be the victims of negotiation deals that don't meet the moment. And when you have entities that have violated, or nations that have violated an agreement over 100 times, that won't stand. And so we are glad that that took place. We're glad that we're not seeing a new renegotiation on that front. And I'm going to have a lot to say come this summer as we're looking at the review of USMCA, because when it comes to seasonal and perishable provisions that were glaringly left out of USMCA 1.0, I've watched more and more producers go under as a result of that oversight than anything else. And so this is our moment where we're going to be leaning in hard and making sure that we have an America first approach as it relates to this trade deal.
Well, black and white decisions, I would think, are relatively easier than those that are gray, because on one side of trade, obviously you don't want to suffer because of having your market open. But on the other side, as it pertains to food, and I was talking recently with the American Frozen Food Institute, you know, they suggest that there are fruits that we don't raise here that in order to make that available for our consumers, there needs to be some level of give and take. But clearly, it's not an easy decision across the board with one fell swoop.
Absolutely. And you mean, you said give and take. Well, we can't give all and everyone else take everything. I mean, it just, it has been so one-sided, particularly in the state of Florida. And, you know, citrus has been a huge, has taken huge losses, not just from the citrus greening, but from some of the trade deals. And, you know, we were able to fix the BRICS issue, which was just a very short-sighted policy. But that right there was forcing us to import citrus from South America. And then, of course, you look at tomatoes. And when you've got tomatoes and producers in Mexico, for example, that are producing the same crop and they're not adhering to terms laid out in the deal. And it's absurd when you think about the fact that the regulatory regime is totally different. What we pay in an hour, they pay in a day. And they're just dumping on our markets and there's no consequences for that. There has to be fairness. So while I am all for free trade, I am for fair trade first and foremost. And that's what we're going to be pushing for as we do this reassessment of USMCA this summer.
So while the chair of the House Ag Committee, Glenn Thompson, and ranking member Craig, along with the ranking and the chair of the Senate Ag Committee, were recently in California with the American Farm Bureau, one of the issues that they raised was potential labor legislation and an attempt at resolving the labor issue in the country that has gone on for so long, gone on for so long for agriculture and other industries. So many undocumented workers, clearly it's broken. How do you fix it? And is now finally the time in a midterm election year that you fix it?
Well, this is one of the hot button issues that nobody wants to touch because, quite frankly, we have a bunch of chicken crap politicians. And I hope that that was clean enough for you because the alternative phrase is what I typically use. But people are scared to address the issue because they don't want to seem weak on the border. They don't want to seem like they're somehow not America first. And what I continue to tell folks is you're not going to find Americans that want to do these jobs. I represent a very rural district, and anyone who tells you otherwise doesn't know what the heck they're talking about. The other thing I hear often is, oh, well, we need to mechanize. Well, that requires a lot of investment. It requires R&D into varieties that can withstand what comes with mechanization. And, you know, I'll use blueberries, for example. You can do severe damage to a blueberry plant if you are using a harvester because it shakes the crap out of them. And if you haven't really invested in the replacement of your crop to withstand the tougher varieties, you're not going to be able to mechanize your harvest. You're going to have to pick by hand. And I will tell you, I've gone out there in the fields and I've tried to pick by hand. I don't hold a candle to these people. And it is an interesting dynamic here in Washington when we talk about labor. There is an unspoken understanding that, yes, we've got to fix this, particularly for H-2A. But you look at us Floridians, H-2A doesn't work for us. We are not a seasonal state. We are a year-round state. And you've got a lot of requirements within H-2A that don't work. The adverse wage effect, thank God it's frozen, but we need to do away with it entirely. We need to expand the definition of agriculture to include all the way up into the point of retail because you have so many different operations happening on an operation, whether it's someone who's doing a mechanic work on a tractor, or they're driving a truck, or they're picking or packing or processing, all of that needs to be addressed in the program. But as it stands, it doesn't. They're not flexible. It doesn't meet the need of the producer today. So expanding that, I think we need to address a touchback. That's not always feasible. I have heard from countless producers that they desperately need this issue fixed. And so that's going to require us coming together with the administration and really piloting a program that meets the moment. And for me, like I said, that means getting rid of the 10-month requirement. It needs to be a year-round. Let people chase the seasons. We've got to deal with some of the horrible contractors that abuse the system, close those loopholes, get rid of adverse wage effect. And I think if you expand the definition of agriculture, that would go a long way as well.
Has your state seen fallowed acres or a change in production of crops because of a lack of labor? What have been the consequences of this particular shortfall?
I mean, it's not just labor. I mean, especially in a state like Florida, where we have over 1,000 people a day moving to the state, you have incredible economic pressures on people to develop. I can't tell you how many multi-generation family farms, right now, maybe they've got 3 kids, right? And one of those kids is a real estate agent. And they're selling off portions of the family farm because why would you go through the heartache of trying to contract labor, have high input costs, deal with uncertain market forces when you could sell per acre thousands and thousands of dollars for development and be done? That's why we all say if we don't get this right in Washington, the last crop is going to be a housing development. That is the tragedy of the family farm in American agriculture right now. And so, yes, to answer your question, yes, labor is a huge, huge driving issue as to why people are leaving the industry, why the family farms are going under. But it's not the only reason why.
Fertilizer costs are one of the top of the list that all crop farmers are talking about. We don't produce as much of it domestically as we could. That's an area that you've spoken to, and I wonder if you would speak to it again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, fertilizer, it's obviously a critical input. And what we've seen over the years, and particularly out of our team, we've been fighting to update the critical minerals list, because when we're reliant on sometimes foreign adversaries or allies, and I'm using air quotes here, when we have foreign nations that control these supplies, it can get a little dicey. And we've seen that with respect to everything from phosphate and, of course, potash and others. And I will say this very plainly, we cannot rely on the World Trade Organization to maintain an objective position as it relates to a lot of these trade issues and imbalances, and fertilizer is a huge one. We saw, of course, China suspending their nitrogen exports, and without these critical inputs, you can't produce a crop. And so we were very successful in getting the Trump administration to update the critical minerals list to include potash and phosphate, but we're not done yet. Urea, while it's not a critical mineral, that is something that we're in talks right now with the administration on. And I think it's even more broadly tied to energy costs than it is just the trade deals. I mean, sitting on energy and commerce, we've worked tirelessly through permitting reform, tax reform through reconciliation, and regulatory reform to bring down the cost of energy, to increase energy production and capacity, refining capacity. And if we can do that, then that will bring down the cost. But then we also want to increase abundance, and that means production here in the United States. So a lot is happening in that space, but it's something you have to ramp up to, and that's something that I'm a little fearful that our producers can't wait for, which is why we're trying to have an above-all approach when it comes to getting these critical inputs into their hands as cost-effectively as possible.
Congresswoman, one more question before we go to close, if I could, and this is federal versus state.
Yeah.
Proposition 12. Where one state setting a standard for the rest. The food labeling issue, pesticide labeling, and others where states want to set their own standard that could very well turn the industry on its ear.
Yeah. As it stands right now, I will tell you, my team and I, we are exploring ingredient transparency and setting a standard because of that issue right there. Every producer, every manufacturer is doing business across state lines, and that right there means that the federal government should be setting the standard, because we've seen in years past, and I'll just pick on California, I will say that we can't let one state dictate to the rest of the country how an entire industry is going to operate, particularly when that state is effectively communist and is more interested in putting people out of business than fostering that business. So we have a lot of work to do to overcome issues as it relates. I mean, you talk about California. We've seen a few other states who have set some standards, but as California goes, the rest of the country has traditionally gone, and we want to set that on a different path. So you'll see some action this summer on that as well.
Well, Congresswoman Kamik, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. It's been a while, but you've been here before, and I hope you remember the Congresswoman gets the last word.
I will say, while things are a little bit tough right now, or a lot tough, I still do firmly believe, especially as we're turning into the 250th birthday of the United States, that our best days truly are ahead of us. I anticipate a renaissance, an American renaissance around the corner. And of course, it's going to be centered around all the wonderful things that we get to say about this country. And one of the big ones being agriculture. So I want to thank all our farmers, our ranchers, our producers. Thank you for all the hard work that y'all do. And just know the best days are ahead.
Our thanks to Florida 3rd District Representative Kat Kamik, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jack Nally.